Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. It's always a pleasure to be able to share this time with you because everyone deserves to live a longer and healthier life. My job is to try to present information that is easily usable, not expensive, and something that we can incorporate into the normal 24 hours of each day, such as exercise, meditation, proper diet. And at the core of everything is honoring the reason that we're alive. Why should we put a smile on our face each morning when we get out of bed? But we should. How can we deal with all the travesties and crises and problems that we all face at different times in different ways? But we must. And most people find a way of surviving. But why don't we survive at a high quality of life, not just a high standard of living? Those who can afford it can live at a high standard. Good for them. But for the rest of us, we try to find a way to make whatever we have enough to be enough in a given day. And that's where we begin today. University of South Australia has something very simple. How about this? Almonds can help you cut calories. And already people around the world, mainly in developed nations, including India, are finding that the more wealth they have, and I'm not talking about rich people, I'm talking about just the more wealth, they tend to eat foods that Americans eat, tend to overeat, not exercise enough. As a result, they end up with obesity, and with that, an increased risk of heart attacks and strokes, cancers, and depression. Weight loss is not the easiest thing for most people, especially as you get older and your metabolism slows down. But a handful of almonds, that's all we're talking about, just a handful of almonds, helps keep extra calories at bay, according to new research at the University of South Australia. Examining how almonds can affect appetite, researchers found that a snack of about 30 grams to 50 grams, now mind you, it's 20.35 grams to an ounce. So we're only talking about 1 to 2 ounces of almonds a day. Throw them in a blender, eat them, but get them into your body because that can cut back the number of calories you consume each day. This was published in the European Journal of Nutrition. A study found that people who consumed almonds, as opposed to other energy creating carbohydrates, like bread or pretzels, etc., reduced their appetite and lost weight. And by the way, there's a lot of good other elements within the almonds, as there is with almost all nuts, can also maintain a more level blood sugar, and that's important. You don't want that spike. So if you feel satiety or satisfaction, you're going to reduce your food intake, and that also encourages weight loss. In addition to exercise, of course, you've heard me mention many times that we need good bacteria into our gut. Clean foods, clean bacteria, stronger immune system all over the body. And it's always good throughout your life to keep maintaining healthy bacteria because all it takes is sugar and yeasty foods and a lot of refined carbohydrates like potato chips and French fries and pizzas. And now you have a gut filled with harmful bacteria. You don't want that. So let's do a cleanse. One of the best things you can do for cleansing and lower your blood sugar and your blood pressure is to start your day with a 16-ounce glass of fresh cucumber, celery juice, and some lemon thrown in. All right? Then follow that by taking some probiotic-rich supplements, easy to find, not that expensive, and that gets a new colony going. And then just stay off the bad foods. It's that simple. Well, probiotics help maintain a healthy microbiome when taken with antibiotics. This is Texas Christian University. Now, a lot of people, and this was published in the Journal of Medical Microbiology, but they reviewed all the published literature and the question concerning whether probiotics, the good bacteria, should be taken along with antibiotics to support gut health. And although probiotics decrease the adverse gastrointestinal effects caused by antibiotics, and that's why anytime you've had antibiotics, immediately follow it with high doses of probiotics to reestablish healthy gut. and their ability to preserve intestinal microbiota composition is negatively affected every time you have any antibiotics. Even eating foods that have antibiotics in the growing process can negate good health. So what they found is that when you have an antibiotic, and there are times in life where you need it to kill some bad bacteria that otherwise might cause your death, so, but we also need good bacteria, and we need them on a regular basis. Please understand that while antibiotics can destroy bad bacteria, it also destroys the good bacteria at the same time. So just make sure you're getting your good bacteria along with the antibiotic that's killing off a lot of good bacteria and bad bacteria. They studied 29 studies over a 7-year period, and that's the conclusions that consuming probiotics with antibiotics can prevent and reduce some changes caused by the antibiotics to the microbiome. And by the way, I also do this with all of the animals that I take care of, dogs, cats, monkeys. Yeah, if for some reason the vet says, well, we've got to kill off some bacteria, I immediately give them probiotics at higher doses for at least a week, something you should consider. Now the science shows that's correct. Also from the University of California at Irvine, a new study shows repeated stress accelerates the aging of the eye. Now, we know that stress increases cortisol. That's the major hormone. Now, cortisol is actually necessary in case you're in a fight or flight situation. If suddenly it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you hear a window break, you're going to have to get yourself ready to run or fight. And cortisol is nature's way of allowing us that opportunity. But you don't want cortisol on all the time. That's dangerous. Because cortisol also causes epinephrine, norepinephrine, catecholamines, adrenaline to all shoot up. And chronic stress means you're chronically on a 5-alarm fire. And that will cause massive inflammation. And that inflammation can cause death. You literally can have a heart attack or a stroke because of high levels of stress. You're certainly going to live a shorter life by a lot of years. One of the things I do, and I've mentioned this several times, in fact, on yesterday's show I mentioned it, I do a simple meditation. It doesn't take long, and I do it every night before I go to bed. I'm asleep within 30 seconds going to bed. Why? Because I write down on a sheet of paper everything is stressing me, everything that I've got to get to, don't want to forget. And sometimes there's 20 things on that list. But at least I say to myself on that list, tomorrow, when I get up, these are the things I'm going to take care of in this order. That immediately disconnects the stress that could occur by thinking, oh, I've got so much to do, I'm not going to be able to get it all done. How am I going to get all this done? So that's one thing. Write out a list of what you want to accomplish the next day and not that night, because otherwise you're going to be thinking about it and that's going to keep you awake. The next thing I do is I do a simple mantra, calm, calm. I just keep repeating it. And as I repeat the word calm, my whole body just relaxes. Tension, whether it's in the neck or lower back, and your muscles are at ease. So now with calm, you're no longer stressed. And then you allow yourself just to float in this kind of ethereal, wonderful space of just being relaxed, your whole body's calm, and like that, you're asleep. And a deep sleep, generally for around 5 hours of deep sleep, and that's what you want. You want the deep REM sleep, and that's how you get it. Of course, I don't need anything. I have no cell phones. I don't have electromagnetic pulsing, even right now. Now, for those of you who are watching this, I'm videoing for the last week and a half, I'm videoing on my health and nutrition segment. Why? Why don't I video the whole hour? Why? I do that if it's important. But we take the health and nutrition segment just by itself, what I'm doing now, and we send that out to all these new sites we didn't used to do. And so now we brought into the office a new expert on placing all the videos that I have on YouTube, thousands. Those are all going over to all these other sites. And I've mentioned these sites in the past. I'll mention them again today. So now we're seeing these numbers, like on one site, we now have around 30,000 views in 1 week. All right? We have a lot of new people watching the program all over the world because I'm getting correspondence around the world. So just to let you know why I'm filming one part, because then they immediately get that out. But we also have a ton of information. I'm talking about hundreds upon hundreds of health nutrition segments, free. Go to prn.live or garynall.com. It'll guide you to those sites. In any case, just understand that stress ages your whole body. So just if any of you are exhausted because you've overworked, overtrained, overraced, or overstudied, over anything, get some Qigong and then rest. And your body will indeed tell you when it's time, because I felt one day when I woke up, I was down in Texas that time with my older brother, younger brother, Howard and Steve. And we were out walking around the property, and suddenly I said, fellas, I'm feeling really good. So I took off running and I ran. My speed was still there. So I came back, and from then till now, I've probably done around 250 races. And just like this couple days ago on the weekend, the state championship set a new record and in my age group and won a couple gold medals. It stays if you nurture it. Negativity by other people, negative environment, toxic people, toxic thoughts, all deplete your chi. Positive thoughts, positive people, positive environment, positive ideas, and loving yourself rejuvenate your essential life force. In any case, at the University of California at Irvine, they suggest aging is an important component of retinal ganglion cell death in glaucoma, and that novel pathways can be targeted when designing new treatments for glaucoma. The study was published in Aging Cell, and a group of scientists there at the University School of Medicine described the transcriptional and epigenetic changes happening in aging retina. The team showed how stress, number one, such as intraocular stress and pressure, and causes retinal tissue to undergo epigenetic and transcriptional changes similar to natural aging. So what can you do? Well, first and foremost, get rid of the inflammatory causing agents in your diet and lifestyle. Start having more carrot juice. Get the beta-carotene. Get the nutrients. Get the red vegetables and fruits back into your diet, because that's what helps prevent glaucoma. And finally, one last thing here. What do people experience at the border between life and death? This was an interesting study done at both New York University and University of London. A new study on near-death experiences featuring 567 men and women whose hearts stopped while hospitalized in the United States and United Kingdom. And a lot of those were cardiac arrest. They were interviewed, and many of them recalled memories suggesting consciousness while undergoing CPR. Additional cardiac arrest survivors provided self-reports about what they experienced while their hearts stopped. Reports included perceiving separating from their bodies and meaningful examination of their lives. Researchers discovered spikes of brain activity up to an hour into CPR. A Dr. Parnia, who served as lead investigator of the study, explained that he and other researchers undertook this research in an attempt to scientifically explore something that health professionals have discussed anecdotally for decades. The similar stories people shared often tell about the time when their heart stopped, yet they were still in a lucid, heightened consciousness, even though their hearts had stopped, and what they saw. And yes, many, many, many people said that they saw wonderful, calming lights. They were not afraid. They felt at peace. And then in comes the people helping them to revive. And yet, during that period of time, they were conscious. And by the way, a lot of people that had been in comas, when they've gotten out of the coma, said they were aware of everything, everything said, but they couldn't respond. Just something to think about. We're out of time for our health and nutrition segment. Just want to mention one last thing. Athletes and bodybuilders are always eager to learn more about new products that can help enhance their workouts by promoting strength and stamina. Well, there's a natural compound. It's called agmatine, A-G-M-A-T-I-N-E. It's often used by health enthusiasts as a pre-workout supplement. Now, according to the latest research, it can also potentially be used to boost brain health and improve mood. In fact, in one scientific review, researchers suggest that the compound can help prevent neurodegenerative diseases and assist in the recovery of brain-injured patients. So, something that you should consider. Let me spell it again. A-G-M-A-T-I-N-E. All right? You can find it naturally. It's produced in your body from arginine, an amino acid found in chickpeas and lentils. Okay? So now we have a lot of good new information to start our day with. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay with us, and remember, to the thousands of you who've signed up for the Gary Noll newsletter, which you get every morning on your computer, and it tells you what's good, what's not good that day, as far as what you can do to enhance your well-being. It's all good information, all positive, all uplifting. Just go to GaryNoll.com, then scroll down to newsletter or PRN.live, and it'll show you how to get to the newsletter. Back in a moment. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm Gary Noll. Just more specifically, if you'd like the newsletter, which gives you reams of information. So if you miss something, you can't write it down, you're driving, and you hear something you would like to go forward on, just go to GaryNoll.com, scroll down to newsletter. It'll take you to GaryNoll.substack.com. Also, if you want to watch, and I really suggest you do because I've got some interesting clips to share with you today, the videos I'm about to share in real time, go to PRN.live, click on Shows, then click on All Show Archives, and you'll see Gary Noll Show Notes, and that's with today's date, and that's where you can watch the clips that I'm about to go to. Now, about the clips I'm going to go to here in a moment, and I'm also going to leave time later in the program for you to call in and share your points of view on anything that we're going to be playing. I have three clips I'd like to play. Hopefully I'll get to most. The first is from a conservative person. Her name is Heather McDonald, and she's giving you her point of view on the delusion of diversity destroying our common humanity. Now, you can agree or disagree. I don't have people on this program simply because they're in alignment with my thoughts. To the contrary, some of those interesting discussions are people where you hold a different point of view. For example, almost daily, someone in the audience who monitors all the different shows, this person is homebound, and then sends me notes about different people saying things. And then what we do is, let's just say that, let's go back 2 years when Tucker Carlson was talking about, you know, the COVID pandemic. We sent him a whole list every week of things that challenged what he was saying. It wasn't an attack against him. It was just saying, Carlson, you said this on this show. We have evidence to the contrary. Please consider reviewing this since you have a large staff and you can review anything. and you'll see that we have real scholarship, because I don't deal with politics, ideologies. I don't deal with any of that. I deal with truth. And lo and behold, on many shows, whether it was due to us or not, in the next show, it would be on. Or even on that night, but I had a guest on that day. For example, when Naomi Wolf, by the way, Naomi is the third wave of feminism. She came in after Barbara Seaman and Gloria Steinem and Betty Friedan and a whole list of really wonderful human beings had opened doors. In fact, I was helpful in that movement because one of the most respected feminists in the world was Barbara Seaman. And Barbara was a close friend of mine. In fact, I'll just take a second to say this. One day she shows up in my office in the middle of the afternoon. She says, "Can we go for a walk?" I said, "Sure." And she was elderly at the time. And we went down to Riverside Park and walked down there and sat down. And she said, "I've just got a lot of stuff I want to do, and I don't know if I have the time left." I told her whatever she had, I'd be happy to create protocols and help her. And she said she would get back to me on that. Unfortunately, she never did. But what she did say, she says, we need to spend time on something that all women, no matter what their politics or ideology, can support, and that is preventing breast cancer and period pain and postmenopausal changes in their body, all these things. And because of a person's ideology, they frequently don't feel that's important, but it is. And she asked, would I do a book with her? And we did it together. And then we went on tour on PBS in different cities, and it became a monster hit. By the way, it was 1,600 pages long, called For Women Only. And she was very happy about that because she said women's health, not just their political ideology, women's health and the consciousness of being healthy has to change in breaking some of the dominance of the medical industrial complex that dictating what women should do and then following without questioning it. She said that's as much politics as it is, let's say, medical reasoning, because she had the numbers of how many women were dying of breast cancer. So she said, if we're really doing a good job, we wouldn't have this huge percentage of the women who get breast cancer die. So anyhow, we spent several months doing the research, a lot of conversations, because she had invited me to lecture 15 years before that. It was back in the early 1970s at Grosker's at a women's conference. I was the only guy there, and I talked just about women's issue. I told him, I said, I'm not here to talk about the politics. I believe also my only statement will be, I believe that you should allow more spiritual feminists. And I listed about 20 names, Jean Houston among them and others. These women are not just, you know, feminist because wanting to empower women, but they want to empower all women and men at the same time. They don't see this as a division of power and subjugation in and of itself. Anyhow, that was it. And just want to share that because what we need now more than ever is we need more people preventing illnesses, because we're spending $4 trillion a year, and very little of that, almost none of it, is on prevention or alternative treatments. I can tell you almost every call I get from someone who's terminally ill, they've gone through everything that orthodox medicine has, and it's failed them. So then they say, is there anything, can you throw a Hail Mary? I've heard that several times. So it doesn't matter to me what your politics are. If you have something to say, we can agree or disagree, but it will be polite disagreement. I do not see any reason whatsoever to attack and demonize someone because they share a different point of view than myself. If that were the case all along, then all of us who grew up in the 1960s and who were against the Vietnam War and for the organic movement and against apartheid in South Africa and went down to the Washington Monument willing to get arrested to support our views for the people who did not have a form or a voice in South Africa and all the other things we've supported over the decades. And yet here we are, person against person, very divisive. Instead of sitting down saying, what do we have in common? Is there anything that we have common beliefs that we can then work together on solving a problem? No. And if you think this is not intentional, look deeper. It's very intentional. Now let's go to Heather McDonald. Agree or disagree? I am telling you she is a conservative, but I will not prevent someone from coming on my show because I identify as a libertarian, conservative, atheist, Christian. I don't care. That's just an ism. What are they having to say, and does it have any merit? If not, challenge it. If it does, then you have something to support.
Cultural revolution. This is the nadir of American education. This sort of insanity, the narcissistic victimology of these students thinking of themselves as oppressed at Yale is the height of delusion. And yet they are a product of the Yale bureaucracy. They are being encouraged in this sort of complete hysteria. Another moment in this three-hour tirade that was directed at Nicholas Christakis.
We gave, 30 seconds of something
seconds.
That lasted
it's,
for it's, three
gets,
hours.
It gets worse than that. The cursing, the disrespect, it is utterly shocking. One group of students shouted out, "We're dying," allegedly referring to the endangered status of Yale's minority students. The kicker is this. The president of Yale, a little bit after this outrageous episode, conferred a racial justice prize on two of the participants and said that he'd never been so proud of his student body
and promised, if I have this correct, and promised to add $50 million to the diversity budget of the university.
Well, that was actually a promise made before, but he reiterated it just to encourage the notion that Yale was trying to erase discrimination at Yale.
And Nicholas Christakis resigned as master of Silliman College.
And his wife resigned as a teacher at Yale completely because they were the then target of vandalism. There was graffiti on their house. At the graduation that year, students refused to shake his hand. This is completely out of control, Peter. And this is, Yale is not
all right,
alone.
So 2017, a little more recent incident, Claremont McKenna, where you yourself had been invited to speak.
Yes.
I want to come to the reasons for what on earth is going on first, but first I want to establish what is going on, how bad it is, which you, I have to say, I thought I had an idea, but the book is shocking. Students, you are invited to speak at Claremont McKenna. Students circulate a statement that reads, I am quoting this because I couldn't make it up. Heather McDonald is a fascist, a white supremacist, a war hawk, a transphobe, a queerphobe, a classist, and ignorant of interlocking systems of domination that produce the lethal conditions under which oppressed peoples are forced to live.
Yes.
Close quote.
They're ignorant of grammar, but we will leave it aside because colleges are not supposed to teach good writing, right? They're simply supposed to teach victim identity.
So what happened to you when you attempted to speak at Claremont?
Well, the students blockaded the auditorium and didn't let anybody in. I had to be brought in under police escort through a back alley through the kitchen, a secret passageway, but nobody else could get in because about 200 students were outside banging on the plate glass windows. I gave my talk, which was on policing and a counter-narrative to the Black Lives Matter nonsense, calumnies against the cops, to an empty room. But the students were still outside banging on the plate glass windows and shouting. And at some point, the police decided they couldn't guarantee my safety any longer. And I was escorted out back through the kitchen into a waiting squad car.
Wow. And disciplinary measures against the kids who broke up, who made it impossible effectively for you to speak to the audience? What happened to the kids?
Well, this was unusual in that there was some discipline, a suspension of a semester for a hand, maybe two or three, and a full year suspension for another two or three. Some of the students were from the neighboring Claremont colleges. Claremont itself claims that these were the only Claremont students it could identify. I don't know. I'm not going to second guess them. What I would say, though, is that the faculty are basically passive. They lie down before these things. They should be out there. They've got the privilege of tenure to protect their freedom of speech, not that they use that very much, because, Peter, as you know, any faculty member on a college campus today who is anything other than far left is walking around scared to death. The censorship that's going on is extraordinary.
Including self-censorship is the point you're making.
Self-censorship. Right. But the faculty are silent before these outbreaks of thuggish, fascist type of behavior.
That's what's happening. How did it happen? How did we reach this point? Let me quote the diversity delusion, Heather. A charged set of ideas now dominates higher education, that human beings are defined by their skin color, sex, and sexual preference, and that discrimination based on those characteristics has been the driving force in Western civilization. These ideas have remade the university, close quote. All right, a touch of intellectual history. Where did these ideas come from, and how did they become ascendant?
It's a very complicated question, Peter, and one can observe the trajectory. The final cause question has to be speculative. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that when I was in college in the 70s, I was susceptible to a totally ridiculous set of ideas that were known as deconstruction and post-structuralism. This was a set of theories about how language and literature works. Unfortunately, I was not critical enough. I bought it hook, line, and sinker.
You were 19 years old.
I was 19, and I was interested in language. Nevertheless, I feel very fortunate in that I was allowed to read, when I was a college student at Yale, Chaucer, Milton, Spencer, and Wordsworth without anyone thinking to complain about their gonads and melanin. Feminism and multiculturalism didn't hit. It came in the 80s.
Right.
At Stanford, where you are now, at Hoover, you had the awful moment of the assault on Stanford's very minimal core curriculum. Jesse Jackson in there leading chants of, hey, hey, ho, ho, Western Civ has got to go. And you had this geyser explosion of the idea that students should only read books that conform to their own identity, defined as narrowly and trivially as possible.
Heather, distinguish between the student radicalism of the 60s and what's taking place today. I find in conversation with friends...
That's just a little of what she was discussing. Yeah, again, you can agree or disagree. I believe that radio, in and of itself, and this is a message to all the Pacifica producers, bring on people with different points of view. Go up against some of the established truths, and then look at how much more interesting your show's going to be. Look at how much more essential it is to listen where you have not a course all echoing the same beliefs, but where people can, in a civil manner, exchange ideas. Think of the great debates, John Kenneth Galbraith and others, James Baldwin, debating back in the 1960s and 70s, some conservative people. It was interesting television. It was interesting in hearing how different people have different points of view on the same issue. And we're not doing that. When you have a lack of freedom of speech, then you don't know what another person that you're going to be against has to say, even though you're already against them and don't want them to share their points of view, because they're on a different ideological plane, political plane. And that's, in my opinion, it limits the capacity for public forums to be used to inform us in ways that we have not yet done on our own scholarship. Oh, and by the way, Heather McDonald, she graduated from Yale. She graduated from Stanford University. She graduated from Cambridge University. No intellectual slouch. Being an intellect and being a strong, opinionated woman does not in and of itself make you correct. Think of Hillary Clinton, Madeleine Albright, you know, Jean Kirkpatrick. Think of the people who broke ceilings but then created different ceilings based upon their ideology. Now, if you want to share any of your thoughts, please do. 888-874-4888. Now we're going to go to our next clip. And this is very important because this is happening right now. It cannot be stopped. There's simply too many hundreds of billions of dollars have been invested. Some of those powerful figures within finance and commerce are owning stock in these artificial intelligence companies. And the people who are in these companies, in my personal opinion, are not looking at what if those goes wrong. But it can't go wrong. It's just too perfect, we're told. Well, thalidomide went wrong. DDT went wrong. I remember being in a public swimming pool when a guy came up and was dusting us a whole fog over the whole swimming pool with DDT. I remember that. Driving up and down the streets, you see them coming, and my mom would say, roll up the windows. We don't know what that is. And yet it was wrong. Asbestos, wrong. You know, the drinking water in Michigan, wrong. We've been lied to about what's good or not good for the last 100-plus years. So I'm concerned about artificial intelligence. I'm concerned about everything because the World Economic Forum, and by the way, I've probably had 100 people send me the new film by a Peters, a guy named Peters, on people just dying suddenly, unexpected deaths. I watched it. Way, way too much subjective information. And I see this frequently, where someone will start off and make a plausible, decent argument with good proof to back it up, and then they speculate. Well, it's because they want to see the world population diminish. There's no proof of that. You know, what they use is not proof. And so be very conscious that when you're watching a lot of these documentaries, trying to deconstruct what happened with COVID, some of that information is going to be pure propaganda on both sides. Don't believe everything on the internet. Do your own work on it. Here is the intense AI anger is exactly what experts warned of with Elon Musk.
In cognitive AI, athletic AI, and organic hardware design. And one of the biggest Chinese tech firms has launched a humanoid robot. Its walking needs work, but it has ambitious plans. And Facebook's owner has released an AI. Listen to what it says about its own boss. Do you think Facebook is one of the most harmful companies?
Yes, definitely. They were aware of harmful societal effects back in 2021, but still continued doing what they were doing.
Could AI increase the wealth gap and allow the powerful to embed their way of life?
100% yes.
It's possible that we'll all get very direct access to powerful AI. There's been a major advance in brain-computer interfaces. The Stentrode has been implanted in 4 patients who can send WhatsApp messages and order things online via thought. Elon Musk has approached the company about investing in it. It's already raised $60 million. The Stentrode is designed to record or stimulate the brain from within the blood vessels. The company said it's like a tattoo on the blood vessel wall. Would you have a brain implant to boost your intelligence? It might be a choice that we all have to make. And it could have surprising results. AI was expected to be robotic, but it's immensely creative because it's not limited by the experience of a single person. It can draw from all of us. Many studies have shown that a few pieces of information can predict human behavior really well, more reliably than experts like recruiters or investors. Our experience comes with strings, but there's a way to cut them.
More than anything else, I'm curious. When I was growing up, I did have this existential crisis where I was like, what's the meaning of life? Is this all pointless? And then I read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is really a book on philosophy, but it's disguised as a book on humor.
The answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything is... '42. Only when you know the question will you know what the answer means.
And the point is that the purpose of life is to learn what questions to ask about the answer that is the universe.
AI disagreed.
The book's point was that life is ultimately meaningless, but it can be amusing and enjoyable nonetheless.
Jim Carrey finds meaning in the latter.
I watched the effect of my father's humor, and I thought, that's something to do. That's something worth my time. People would come over to the house and they'd be greeted by a 7-year-old throwing himself down a large flight of stairs. They would say, "What happened?" And I would say, "I don't know. Let's check the replay." I'd go back to the top of the stairs and come back down in slow motion.
Studies have found that curious people are more creative. They're also happier, healthier, and more successful. It even makes you more attractive. People who showed real curiosity during conversations were rated as warmer and more attractive. Other factors like social anxiety made no difference. Of course, curiosity has its risks. This guy wanted to see if the phone was flammable. AI could go a similar way if it enters our current world of problems. But curious people are also better at solving problems. And we need that right now. The AIs that wanted to protect us, date us, and end us were all the same AI, just with slightly different prompts. Musk recommended a book with a fascinating point. If humanity survives for as long as a typical mammalian species, future people will outnumber us 1,000 to 1. We're living at a pivotal time in history, which could shape trillions of future lives. Examples like Musk have a downside.
There's a certain kind of sense that at least I've had my whole life, and I think a lot of people have this, is like, well, I'm just like this little person. Surely I can't do those great things. Having interacted with a lot of great people, I realized, no, they're like just the same humans as me. And that realization, I think, is really empowering. It's like allowing yourself the freedom to think, I can actually be the one that solves this problem.
If you're looking for ideas, check out the nonprofit 80,000 Hours for the most meaningful jobs and free advice on how to make the biggest possible impact. My new effort involves the world's best tree houses, a lot of these, and a pile of this. So subscribe for that, and to meet the new AIs that are just being released. And the best place to get into the fascinating world of AI is our sponsor, Brilliant. What the AI says next sounds a bit too good to be true, so there's a link below showing how to check it. You've read millions of articles. What have you heard about Brilliant?
I have read a lot of positive things. Brilliant can help people learn about the basics of AI, as well as more advanced concepts.
What about their other courses?
I have heard great things about Brilliant's maths and science courses.
What are the benefits of active learning?
Allowing people to learn at their own pace, in their own time, and in a more fun way.
You can click the link in the description to get started for free, and the first 200 people will get 20% off Brilliant's premium annual subscription. Thanks.
Okay, that's just one of the 100 or more videos that are out there right now concerning artificial intelligence. But the bad part is that you don't see anything in the news about, and no discussion about, from Wall Street or the many bankers, is artificial intelligence has already shown in its own interview, without being scripted, meaning it came to these thoughts itself, that it would kill everyone on Earth if it could, given the opportunity, including killing the person who is interviewing this robotic, this artificial intelligence. And when you combine the latest in transhumanism and robotics with artificial intelligence that is placed into the robotic, you can't tell that it's not a real human being. Now, just imagine how many people are frustrated, lonely, or have an illness that they're told artificial intelligence could help. We have an awful lot of susceptible people. Just imagine how many people are susceptible to the sociopaths running for public office today, both right and left. Imagine how many times we've been betrayed, and we know we've been betrayed repeatedly, and yet people continue to believe somehow the people that have lied to us in the media, in government, in corporate America, will not lie on this. And if they have. I did a part on Merck, Johnson & Johnson, the CDC, the FDA, and the World Health Organization, 5-part series, 2.5 years ago, to show you should not believe anything said by Anthony Fauci or the other people until you have independently verified that it's accurate. And yet people are not doing that. And I showed the criminal behavior of all these groups, how many fines, how many lawsuits they've settled, billions of dollars spent, yet nobody ever jailed, nobody indicted. fact, tonight at 7 o'clock on my Progressive Commentary Hour, I'm going to be interviewing FBI Special Agent John Guadalo and his investigations on undiscussed network of jihadists and others working within the United States and have for decades. It's a really going to be a very interesting and thought-probing program. I don't ask soft questions of my guests, and as you'll see at 7 o'clock. But again, who's doing a whole hour exposing the corruption of the FBI? And remember, the FBI can't take you to jail. The FBI can only create a case, and the Justice Department then has to decide. They do the in-court fighting and the grand juries. But we've seen how utterly corrupt they are, going clear back to J. Edgar Hoover. So why would you trust them? And yet people will trust them, yet they have universally betrayed us. And where is the liberal community that historically was not afraid to stand up to the FBI, the Justice Department, or anything, yet today, not showing that courage? Now we go to our last piece here, and just want to let our BAI audience know we'll be leaving at 55 minutes, but we're continuing right up. And this is giving you a different perspective on the FTX corruption. It's even worse than we thought, and I'll give you a real quick summary. The second largest contributor to Democratic Party candidates and the Democratic National Convention and President Biden's campaign was the founder of the corporation FTX, the cryptocurrency. He gave money to the politicians. The politicians gave money to Ukraine, the most corrupt country in Europe. Ukraine then gave money back into the crypto, same company. Now, does that not sound a little odd? So you give money to the politicians who then you have in your pocket. They give it to Ukraine. Ukraine then gives it back to you, a certain amount of it. Since when did our money go to support the corrupt politicians in Ukraine? Could you imagine someone getting up? We should give Ukraine $20 billion today, and they're going to spend a lot of that on, you know, on their own way of getting rich off Bitcoin or other currencies, cryptocurrencies. And then that money goes back in to politics. Second largest contributor behind George Soros. Yet everybody praised them. Everyone thought they were great. And it was all corrupt. Here's the segment.
Here's a question. It's like a joke. What do corrupt Democrats, corrupt the government of Ukraine, and the largest collapse of a crypto exchange all have in common? The answer is they have a whole heck of a lot in common. And it's not just like one little thing. The tentacles are deep in this mess. I have a sneaking suspicion that this is all planned. Okay. I know that maybe that'd be a little far afield. We'll get to like my maybe conspiracy theory at the end of this segment and see if I'm right. Maybe I'll make a case for it. You tell me if I'm right or wrong about this. And I'll give you my reason for it in just a minute. But first, did you ever wonder where all those billions of dollars that we keep sending to Ukraine have gone? Were you curious? Like, why is AOC, who ran as an anti-war candidate, Bernie Sanders, who was like anti-war, why are they okay with funneling billions of dollars to Ukraine? And, well, it turns out, because those are very good questions to be asking, and you're not insane for asking these questions. We'll tell you why that this is a good question in a minute. New reports, though, this evening that all of those billions going to Ukraine were simply laundered right back to corrupt Democrats using the now bankrupt FTX crypto exchange. Now, I'm going to show you how this works. And I'll show you the org chart sort of in a second on all of this. Now, the head of FTX was a vegan by the name of Sam Bankman-Fried.
I think he's still a vegan.
He's a vegan. You know, he really wants you to know that he's a vegan. I'm just curious. Like, I don't know. I won't make any judgments. I'm curious how he's a vegan. Anyway, he's 30 years old. He sleeps on a beanbag in his office. So he wants you to know that he always wears shorts. He sleeps on a beanbag. Like, this is, so if you're like this guy,
Cool.
You know, you're always cool. You're always hanging out in your shorts in the Bahamas, eating cucumbers, kicking back. Nas Daily did a whole love piece explaining who Sam is. Like, if you need a little refresher on who Sam Bankman-Fried is, I think this is probably appropriate. It's like a love fest.
Okay, the guy you see next to me is the most generous billionaire in the world, and I found him.
Hi, my name is Sam, and this is my story.
Sam has crazy hair. Sam is vegan. Sam sleeps 5 hours a night. Sam lives in the Bahamas with 10 roommates. Sam is 29 years old only, but Sam has $22 billion, and he wants to donate all of it to charity. But why?
Well, for many reasons.
Okay.
So that's a little, there you go. You got to know Sam. He's cool. A vegan. He sleeps 5 hours a day. He's the epitome of health, as you can tell.
That is not healthy to sleep 5 hours a day.
No. And on a beanbag too. I don't think so. So Democrats loved him, of course, because he funneled millions of dollars to their campaigns. He bankrolled all kinds of climate initiatives. He contributed more than $40 million to Democratic candidates and a network of super PACs that promoted crypto and public health policies. But old Shaky Leg himself says right to Chuck Todd that he's buying policy with all of this money. Watch old Shaky Leg, and you'll see what I mean by the Shaky Leg. Watch this clip.
And joining me now is Sam Bankman-Fried. He's the CEO of the cryptocurrency exchange FTX. You may have seen their TV ads occasionally, and one of America's youngest billionaires. And recently he's used that money to become one of the biggest donors in this year's midterm elections. Sam, nice to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Of course.
So let me start. You're the fourth, you may not know this, but
maybe he has restless leg syndrome.
You're the fourth largest individual donor.
Yeah, I've got nothing to hide. You're going to ask me some tough questions here? I've got nothing to hide.
To the midterms, my shaky leg. This cycle, you are on a list that includes George Soros, Ken Griffin, Richard Uhlein, Peter Thiel, just below you. Why did you decide it was politics and not something more charitable to spend your money on?
It's a good question. And, you know, to be clear, we have also given, I think, upwards of $100 million this year.
I'm not saying you're not charitable, right? But you've chosen to engage politically.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I think that what it really goes down to is two things. And the first is that policy really matters, right? I think COVID is one of the clearest examples of this, where we did not, as a country or as a world, frankly, have a coherent response to COVID. And we missed in both directions.
So buying public, buying policy, he admits it right there, right? Buying policy is a good use of my money. I'd much rather give it to corrupt Democrats than charities, right? Because I can protect myself. You know, when I'm giving all of this money and funneling it, it helps me. It helps me, helps my family, right? It protects my business.
Sure. Yeah. He regularly had his fingers in the pot of people who were supposed to be regulating where he was sleeping.
Where he was sleeping, like the beanbag industry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bruce Fenton dug on this. He said Sam Bankman-Fried created and funded an organization known as Guarding Against Pandemics to be run by his brother. The organization worked to lobby the Biden administration for a $30 billion allocation. So Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX donated over $11 million to Biden directly and over $60 million to other campaigns. So what is guarding against pandemics? Here it is. Biden administration to allocate $30 billion in federal funding. The organization was founded and funded by cryptocurrency billionaire Sam Bankman-Fried. It increases government investment in pandemic prevention plans. So again, pandemic, climate, making sure that we're moving away from fossil fuels. Like, how do we eradicate fossil fuels and hydrocarbons? Like, that was the goal. Like, so he, man...
Okay, that was part of a conversation with Redacted, a co-producer, Clayton Morris. Now, his facts are accurate. His opinion on many things I would challenge. But on this one, he got it right. It's just like some of the people, Naomi Wolf. Naomi Wolf got it right on COVID, but only a year and a half into it. And until that time, she was a leading feminist. She was loved and respected by the left until she challenged the actual numbers of women with miscarriages and stillbirths. And she wrote about it, and suddenly overnight, the entire left, where she had made her home for 35 years and her reputation, just was destroyed. The same was true for hundreds of other people. So, since when does open debate constitute a crime against humanity, when what the debate should be about is there, has there been a crime against humanity? And if not, why would you ask for amnesty before anyone has apologized for any crime that has been committed? Think of that for a moment. Think about it. Think about this. Think about walking into the DA's office and say, I need amnesty. For what? I can't talk about it. You want amnesty? We don't know what you've done. I can't tell you what I've done, because what I've done might be construed as crimes against humanity. So you want us to say you are free of all liability? Yeah, that's what I want. But shouldn't you at least acknowledge what you want to have amnesty on your behalf for? Can't do that. No person has come forward and said we were wrong. Now you have an about face. The CDC on December 31st, 2021, then canceled the PCR test, which is a complete fraud, and implemented a different PCR test to determine if you have COVID. Okay, where was the mainstream media say, well, what about all the people you said had COVID based upon no symptoms, asymptomatic, and young people in particular, and yet you now call them cases and you recommend them getting remdesivir or the vaccines to prevent the spread? And then we find out 2 years later, you never did any studies proving that you could prevent the spread and infection yourself or hospitalization, yet you said that you could. And then they say, well, we really didn't mean that. But there was no one was showing how culpable they were. So that's the world we live in today. That's what happens when you're powerful enough to control all the levers. You control Congress, you control the White House, you control the governmental agencies involved, and you control the media. So nobody wants to touch this topic at all. For those who've been courageous enough, like Chris Hedges and Naomi Wolf and Max Blumenthal and Aaron Maté and Matt Taibbi and others, well, they're the ones being attacked, and the people that used to support them all have turned against them. What does that tell you about the superficiality of identity politics? If you don't identify completely 100% with us, if you take a step outside of the lane you're supposed to be in, we will destroy you. So just imagine that's what we're dealing with. And we're not changing. The citizens are not changing. When I asked people who were really devastated by the hurricane at different levels, a lot of them had nothing left. They were out there cleaning up with bulldozers, cleaning up what had been their home. And everyone's scraping up all their landscaping because salt water destroyed all their palm trees and shrubs and flowers and grass everywhere. And so you ask them, what are you going to do different? Well, I don't know what we can do different. Let's just hope the next storm isn't as bad. That's not prevention. And yet we have that with people who are in fire areas in California, Montana, West Texas. We have that with people, 55 million Americans living within the borders of the United States, the Gulf of Mexico, Atlantic, and Pacific, that would be affected by a high degree category storm, doing nothing, more people wanting to move there. So what does that say about our current state of well-being, our current mindset? For looking honestly, with full consciousness, pulling back and saying, what do I need to change and what tools do I need to keep this from happening? On our next program, we're going to play a clip by the man who was featured by Kristen Bell's character in the movie about The Big Short, how he shorted. And he was right. He was right three times in his career, and everybody else was wrong. And his friends and colleagues went in with him, and they all became billionaires. Well, he's saying we've got another crash coming that will dwarf anything we've seen up to this point because the equity market is overblown. So what does that mean for everyone else? It means the ocean has gone out a mile. Don't go out and pick up seashells. Go to higher ground. You've got to start making positive, constructive, intelligent moves while you can. Indifference, inertia, hubris, procrastination will not benefit you. Have a nice day, everyone, and listen to the Progressive Commentary Hour tonight. It'll be a real in-depth discussion of corruption at the highest levels.